WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Monday is Academy Awards night, so we have a movie show for you on this archive edition of Fresh Air. Our interviews are with some of the great behind-the-camera talents. In fact, our first guest has not only worked behind the camera, he invented the camera that has changed the way movies are shot. Garrett Brown won a 1977 Academy Award for technical achievement for his invention, the Steadicam. This is a portable camera with a specially designed harness that enables the camera operator to walk, run, climb, or leap and still get a stable, steady image. There are now many trained Steadicam operators, but in the early days, Brown had to shoot most of the Steadicam scenes himself. You've seen his work in such films as Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Return of the Jedi, Rocky, and The Shining. When I spoke with him in 1985, I asked what he had in mind when he dreamed up the Steadicam.
The problem is a handheld cameraman inevitably shakes the camera because human beings are always in motion, hopefully. The Steadicam deals with that problem by isolating the camera from the cameraman. This object that he's lugging around is actually held by a sort of mechanical arm, which is attached to a strange-looking suit that the cameraman wears. And the mechanical arm is like a spring sort of suspension system. It just tunes out all the bumps. And then the camera itself is arranged in a sort of fundamentally stable shape. It's basically, you know, lengthened and made taller and just made more inert. Sad to say, it's an invention that barely works. I must report, it takes a good operator. I mean, it's like saying the violin works to make wonderful music. In the early days, we peddled the Steadicam as if any bag lady could pick it up and make wonderful shots with it. It turns out that it takes a lot of practice and so on. So as inventions go, I wouldn't say it's a triumph of inventing. It's somehow a triumph of things that work with people, like the violin or the skateboard or the blood pressure measuring instrument, if you will.
What were some of the first sequences that you really tested the Steadicam for a movie?
Well, for a movie, I was thrown in headfirst, just, you know, hurled right into the water on Bound for Glory. My first shot on a feature involved 900 extras and a 46-acre set, and there I was up on a crane, you know, trembling out of just pure nervousness and funk, you know, looking around me. And fortunately, they didn't make the shot before lunch, and I had a couple of beers at lunch and calmed down a bit. But I remember the operator who was looking over my shoulder at the time and who is now a cameraman shooting a Spielberg film, and he and I were just talking about this. He said, "This thing must work," he says, "because you're shaken and the image is still, you know." And I'm sure he thought perhaps the way it worked is it made the cameraman shake. And, you know,
what were some of the typical requests that you got when the Steadicam was first available from directors who realized that the Steadicam could liberate them to achieve certain shots that would have taken weeks to set up beforehand?
Well, some realized it right away, and some saw it as a stunt tool. Some were quite happy with the conventional way of making films, and except for the shot like running after somebody or running up and down steps. My God, I did more than my share of shots running after people and leaping up stairs and jumping over gaps and things and impersonating rushing POVs, you know, and all that. And there were a few people, Avildsen among them, who saw more than that in it and who used it for liberating the process of filmmaking as much as liberating the shot, because the process involves a lot of paraphernalia, doesn't it? It involves all the laying down of rails and equipment and so on. And there are my favorite Steadicam shots are ones that on screen you wouldn't know the difference. You know, they are just a traveling camera. They involve putting the lens where somebody wants it, that's all. But you wouldn't look at it and say, "Oh, wow, what a shot." What you don't see behind the scenes is that shot was made in a flash, instantaneously. You walk in, you make it.
You shot the sequence on the rope bridge in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, there's a case where, you know, that's the only way to get a camera moving out there that doesn't look terrible. I mean, a handheld guy, if he felt the way I did on that bridge, would have been quivering even more than normal.
Can you describe the scene and the shot that you were asked to do?
This bridge was built by a company that makes dams, and they're a pretty rough and ready outfit. They built a real suspension bridge, 350 feet in the air. Yes, it had steel cables inside the rope, you know, dressing cables, and it had boards on it that were allegedly very strong and so on, but there were big gaps between them. If you didn't walk with your feet straight ahead, your foot would go right down between the boards. So that implies also that you could see down between them, and that was not a treat. I can tell you to look, you know, down 350 feet as you're lurching on this thing, and it was violently in motion. Every time Harrison ran across it, it would lurch up and down a couple of feet. And he even actually went through one of the boards at one point, and there was a great hoo-ha and uproar and finger-pointing about who put that board in and didn't test it and so on. His leg went through it, and fortunately his other leg stopped him from the rest of him from going through. But that happened just before I went out to do my thing, so I had no great, you know, confidence in this bridge with me and my extra 50 pounds of machinery, you know. It was scary. And then when all the local extras dressed up as soldiers started to run, each of them lurching about, the thing was airborne, you know.
Well, how did you hold on?
It was hot, by the way. I held on with one hand and operated with the other. And my toes, I trained my toes to hang on to the boards. I mean, it was bad.
Doesn't that bridge get blown up, too?
Yes, I declined to be on the shot when it was blown up.
Are there scenes that you declined from because they're too dangerous?
No, very few. Usually everybody agrees generally, you know, what is too dangerous and what isn't. There have been very few. The only time I ever really made a fuss about anything was we had a shot potentially to walk up the cable of the Brooklyn Bridge for a film called Wolfen. And without inspecting the cable, and my memory of a bridge cable is it's the size of a truck and it shouldn't be any problem and so on, I said, well, all right, I'll do it, but I made some conditions. We've got to rehearse it for a day without the pressure of production. I want you to hire a mountain climbing type guy to go with me to be sure that I'm shackled and tied up right and so on. And I said, I'll try it. And due to the pressure of production, they couldn't lay on that extra day. So I said, well, okay, I will not walk up the cable and shoot. But in fact, I ended up walking up the thing anyway, holding the, you know, with the gear in a backpack, and we shot on top of the bridge. And I made very sure that everybody knew that the only way I would do that is if I was tied with a rope to a big iron ring that I spotted in the middle of the top of the bridge on a rope just short enough that I couldn't inadvertently go off the edge, because you get enthralled with shooting, and a gust of wind comes up, and bye-bye. Human and sewing machine, head for the drink, you know.
You also did the sequence in Return of the Jedi in the forest where these crazy creatures are driving one on some kind of motorized vehicle.
Speeder bikes.
Speeder bikes, yeah, like through the trees at amazing speed. And I kept wondering how you managed to do that.
Well, I trained and trained, and I managed to run 130 miles an hour just for short periods.
Did you really?
No.
No, okay. No. I'll believe anything.
Are you kidding? You've been in this business too long,
that's
Terry.
Right.
You've been told too many outrageous things by too many people. It's clear.
Okay, so now you can tell me how you really did it.
The way it was done was sort of a film trick. And actually, I loved this job. I had a wonderful time. First of all, I like the tough ones. I like advancing the art a little bit. And this was a first. I got a phone call. Do you think it's possible if you were to walk along with the camera running very slowly? The idea was maybe one frame every second, okay? Well, now, if you project that film at 24 frames a second, you have sped up what I did 24 times, clearly, okay? So 24 times 5 miles an hour walking speed, let's say, is, you know, 120 miles an hour. Can it be held steady enough so that it won't look like it's vibrating and bounding around and so on? And my guess was yes. And the way it was done was quite a tour de force, really, because I had to walk through the redwoods about 1,000 yards carrying this thing, but the place that it was pointed couldn't deviate by a fraction of a degree from one side to the other, nor could its height, nor could its side-to-side position, nor could my speed, nor could its roll attitude. And the way we positioned it was we strung an invisible green thread through the woods and pulled it taut. And as I walked along, I just kept the camera within an inch or so of that thread, which is so tiny in the vast scene of all that you couldn't see it. And then I aimed the thing with a very long telephoto sort of side finder video camera. And I would aim it at a handkerchief or something 1,000 yards away and try and keep that in the lens with a very long lens. And now, of course, if that's still in there, then the overall angle hasn't changed much. But it was frighteningly precise work, because if I let the thing sink a foot, let's say it took 5 seconds for it to fall a foot, well, then there would be a third of a second severe bump in the shot once it sped up. So,
how many takes of that sequence did you do?
Well, we shot a lot of that. That was on, I think the sequence ran nearly 5 minutes. And I shot, of course, the background plates, so-called, and then the optical fellows matted in all the speeder bikes in the foreground. I supplied the, you know, the backgrounds at high speed. And I think I must have made 14 or 15 shots in different places and probably did 3 or 4 takes apiece.
Some of the shots that you do have actors in them, and you might have to do some really tricky choreography. But it's up to the actors, too, to make sure that they've gotten the scene well performed, well gotten their lines right and everything. Have you ever wanted to strangle an actor because you did your part and you got through this really tricky, long shot and they didn't perform well in that scene, and because of that, you had to go through all that choreography all over again?
Well, I think with all due humility, I must point out that the actors are lumbered with the idea of having to do 3-minute scenes all through a set because I exist. And you can imagine the look of dismay on the face of actor or, you know, grip or anyone else in the set when somebody blows a line, or if I make a mistake 3 minutes in, I could cause him to have to do 3 minutes of giving his all and, the ultimate performance again because somebody wants it in one take, you know. And I'm not crazy about that, to be honest. I mean, to me, the cut is a noble institution. I love cuts. Audiences are used to them. I mean, I'd be happy to shoot all of it, but I like doing it in short pieces just like an actor does for the same reason. You can concentrate on the piece, make it perfect, you know. But when we all have to be spectacular for 3 minutes in a row, it's rough. Kubrick used to insist on numerous passes on shots like that ran 3 minutes. I mean, 50. Looking for some elusive, you know, chemistry that only he could see or appreciate, possibly.
Someone like Kubrick, I would imagine, would define to a hair how he'd want a shot framed.
Yeah, we'd have arguments about whether the crosshairs was on the center of the nose or slightly displaced in a wide shot, you know. All of us had elected to do the film, and all of us knew Stanley well enough to know that's what the game was, and all of us were quite willing in the hopes that he would get precisely what he wanted, and all of us, including Nicholson and everybody else. But there were times when it was a matter for consideration on another planet, whether the crosshair was here or here. I even once put a crosshairs made of tape on Shelley Duvall's nose and lined it up precisely with the crosshairs. For you folks out there who just see movies in the theater, the crosshairs are on the ground glass of the camera, and they indicate the center of the frame. Well, I lined up that crosshair with the fake one of gaffer's tape and held it very steadily, and then as the shot moved on, I moved mine away, and there were two in the frame, and hers always stayed right exactly where I wanted it. This is what you get into, and after take 40 in Great Britain in June when you're doing winter scenes that are supposedly taking place in Colorado.
So are people using less cliche shots now with the Steadicam? You said initially would call you up initially to run up and down stairs.
Yeah,
so
it's quite fun.
What are some of the calls you get now?
Well, I get called to do, for an example, I worked on Falling in Love. The shots were proceeding up the street just ahead of Streep in a place where if you made a big production out of it and laid rails and so on, it happened to be on Fifth Avenue right in front of the Trump Tower, you would draw crowds that would be unmanageable. So we basically popped out of the shadows and made the shot before anybody was quite aware of what we were doing, and I like that. I like using it that way. Sad to say, or good to say, there was another production on the same block with a Steadicam with another gentleman who's one of the living masters operating on a Mickey Rooney movie. So their crowd control would release people just as we were trying to stop people, and it all got very comical. And then Sidney Lumet showed up and wheeled in and backed his truck up and stole a shot on our permits, and Cotton Club was shooting up the street in a commercial. It was like one of those days in New York where the whole world is a movie set. It was very funny. I even walked into the wrong camera truck. It was Teddy Churchill's truck who was doing the Mickey Rooney film.
So it must be easy to lose perspective when you're surrounded by that many movies.
Fun also, though, because we always used to say there should be one of these on every corner Steadicam. So we're getting there. It's a fun machine. I don't know if I've ever really expressed this properly, but it is the operating a film is intriguing, as you can imagine, and the operator is quite a deep character. I mean, he has a lot more to do than simply point the thing. But operating the film and doing the athletic routine of Steadicam, in which you place it in space as well, is fascinating. It's just about my most favorite thing to do.
Garrett Brown recruited in 1985. He won an Academy Award in 1977 for his invention, the Steadicam. This is Fresh Air.